But really, the strategy and what has been my strategy over the last 19 years, the core focus has been buying income producing properties, buying properties, viewing them as in their own individual businesses that create reoccurring revenue on a monthly basis.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 124 with veteran real estate investor, Kevin Bupp.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and today's co-host, once again, is our friend Harrison Painter. In case this is the first time that you're listening in, this is a show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Today is another real estate investing session. I think it's important that we look at real estate investing a little bit more in detail on what it is, because it's something that we've all probably heard of or thought about getting into at one point or another, especially if you've listened to Robert Kiyosaki or read any of his books. In the last session, we talked with Whitney Nicely about her first 5 years of being a real estate investor, and she's had some really great results, and I was blown away by all of her tips and strategies. Great listen if you're looking for someone who can give you practical knowledge if you're just getting started. In contrast, today we're talking with someone who's been in the business for nearly 20 years. He's had experience with just about everything from raw land to single family houses and eventually getting into apartment complexes. However, he says that you can't get a better deal than investing in mobile home parks. There's a lot of reasons for this that we'll be going into detail about in the conversation, but let's just say that this is a niche that doesn't cross the radar of most real estate investors. While it does take a considerable bit more money to play in this niche, however, the great part about real estate investing is that you don't have to be the one doing the actual investing. You could simply be the connector of the opportunity to the person who has the resources. So I'm sure someone at your local REIA, your Real Estate Investing Association, would be interested in this kind of opportunity if it comes up. You could partner with them, or heck, I mean, even Kevin himself might be interested to help you out. In this conversation, he actually gives us some of the criteria that should be met before he would be interested in a property himself. Also in this conversation, we talk about how Kevin thinks someone should get started in real estate investing, why he initially started investing in mobile home parks, and why he is not worried about tenants not paying on time in the parks his company owns. Before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about millennial skills and something you guys know that I've been learning and helping clients implement recently is chatbots or Facebook. And if you're not familiar with a chatbot, it's basically an assistant program that will allow you to easily communicate with multiple people through Facebook Messenger. Using a message, the recipient can select how to respond, and then based on that response, your bot will send another message. Why is this important? Well, think about this. How often do you specifically check your email? If you're under 40, it's probably not much. Maybe a couple dimes a day if you're lucky. Now think about how frequently you check Facebook or your favorite social media. You know, quite a bit more if you're in that under 40 demographic. Which would you see yourself responding to sooner, a Facebook message or an email? You know, personally, I'd respond to a message through Messenger because I also have my text going through it. So that being the case, when I heard about chatbots, I had to find out more. And soon I realized that the guest of session 94, Hector Santiesteban, was giving out free training on how to use bots in the way that I wanted to. So I signed up for his bot, which would soon let me know when all the free trainings were. So if you don't want to miss out on this opportunity to update your marketing strategies for 2018 and beyond, then all you have to do is go to newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. Through that, you'll be taken to the Millennial Skills bot itself and start to get an idea of what chatbots are all about and how powerful they really are. So again, to get started with that, go on over to newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. All right. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on CastBox, iTunes, or whatever you're listening to your podcasts with. Personally, again, I recommend CastBox as it has a great commenting system, and I'd love to hear from you guys on there. And as usual, show notes and show extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/124, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm JC Preston, your host, and with me today is a man with the Made for Media name, Harrison Painter. Hey, Harrison, how you doing?
Life is good. Life is good, brother. How about you?
Enjoying our early summer that we have here in central Indiana. 90 degree weather.
We just skipped right through spring. Yeah. We had no spring whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, I don't have AC right now, so that's how much I'm enjoying it. So, yes.
I'm excited about today's show.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely looking forward to today. So,
real estate.
Yeah. Well, and this is your background, right? I mean,
well, it's my previous life. It was a good life and a bad life. But the other issue is we just bought a building, a commercial building.
Yes.
Speaking of real estate, we bought a building on Indy's east side. We're planting our flag. It's going to be incredible, man. We're going to be able to do the Amplify Hope program, really grow it. Instead of doing one incubator a year, we're going to be able to do three or four. We're going to be able to do a lot more different things with it. So we're going to have 16,000 square feet on Indy's east side.
Yeah. And I was actually driving through there the other day just to kind of see where it was. And it's an untapped area of the city. That's for sure. Cause I didn't even know that part of the town was over there. So that's cool. Getting back to the show today, really exciting. Speaking of real estate, our guest today is, I would say that his specialty is something that I've never heard of before. Recently, I had a guest on by the name of Whitney Nicely, and she had talked about how she got into real estate as just a way of making passive income. And that's kind of always what I assumed real estate was. But then recently, I went to a meetup here in town. That
you went to AREA?
Yes, AREA. My area is what they call it these days. But yeah, no, I mean, and it was full of wholesalers, and I wasn't even really quite sure what wholesalers were until I got back to my car and Googled it. And I was like, oh, so these guys are like flippers. Got it. So completely different than what Whitney does, which she's more of a rental person versus flipping. And I wanted to bring someone else on to kind of maybe if we can go into clearing some of this stuff up, what's better for people who are wanting to be, you know, get into real estate. Today's guest is amazing because let's just say that he has a top iTunes podcast and, you know, he's a serial entrepreneur with over $40 million of real estate transaction. And he's been involved with everything, including getting started with apartment buildings, single family homes, office buildings, I mean, land, you name it. It's on his repertoire. And is, again, the thing that really is interesting to me is that he invests in something that I don't think a lot of people think about, which is mobile home parks. And I mean, really, that's trailer parks for those who might not know the politically correct name.
I don't think we're supposed to call them that anymore.
In Indiana, that's what we call him. But yeah, really excited to have our guest on today. His name is Kevin Bupp. He can be found at kevinbupp.com. And Kevin, welcome to the show, man.
JC and Harrison, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it. And I will correct you. It is manufactured housing. That's what we call them nowadays.
Okay.
Manufactured housing.
There's three different layers. There's trailer parks, which are, you could still call some of them trailer parks. The ones where like the low scums of the earth live, like the transient crowd, like we don't own that kind of stuff. And then you got mobile home parks, which are kind of like the blue collar. And then you got manufactured housing, which is fancy, ooh, fancy mobile home parks. So,
well, yeah, I mean, it's just something to, like, again, to me, I didn't think about it. You know, I never thought about getting into raw land that you can actually just buy up land and people are going to pay, you know, pay you money to rent it out every month. And I was just like, huh. So yeah, really glad to have you on. And, you know, I got to ask the first question, how did you get into real estate? Because I don't think that many people go to school or, you know, go into their career thinking that they're going to be a real estate person. How'd you get started?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. I always like to say that real estate found me. I didn't find it. And I wasn't all that great of a student in high school, guys. I mean, I just got by. Like, I just really enjoyed school too much, and I enjoyed the extracurricular activities after school more than I did the school itself. And so I knew that when I graduated, I knew if I went away to college, went away to university, like a lot of my friends, I probably would have partied myself out of school like within a year. And so I went to community college, saved my parents some money, and just figured I would get some focus before I went away. So my goal was to like stay 2 years at community college and then transfer out. Well, in that period of time, I met a gentleman through a girl I was dating, and he was a local real estate investor. And he owned many different single family properties and multifamily properties in and around the area where I grew up, which was Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And he basically, I think he might have seen like a struggling kid to me, like kind of a guy that had no direction. I don't know what it was, but you know, I befriended him. His name was David, and David invited me to a real estate 3-day seminar down in Philadelphia. I grew up in Pennsylvania. He invited me to the seminar, and I honestly didn't know anything about real estate investing. I'd never read a book on it. All I saw was this guy's lifestyle, and he seemed to have a very flexible lifestyle. Drove a really nice car, dressed really nice, and just seemed to have in my eyes, a very cool life. Like, my parents were very blue collar, working 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. That was not what he was doing. And so I was kind of inspired by just the lifestyle that he, you know, portrayed. And so I went, and, you know, long story short, after that 3-day seminar I went to with him, I was intrigued enough by the concept. And this was, you know, basically fixing up and flipping single family homes. Okay. That's what this real estate seminar was about. I was intrigued enough by what I learned there and also what he was doing that I came back with the plan of attack of I'm going to be a real estate investor. I really still didn't know what that meant, but I essentially went to David and said, you know, David, I want to learn this business. I want to do what you do. I don't know what that is yet, but I want to do what you do. In exchange for you teaching me, can I, you know, essentially offer any services you need? I mean, I'll do whatever you ask as far as be with contractors, realtors, sign leases. I'll basically be your assistant for free in exchange for you teaching me this business. And he accepted. And so I basically followed him around and did everything and anything in between classes and working to help him and his business grow. And in exchange, he taught me the business. And so that was my first entrance into real estate. It took me about a year and a half before I bought my own first property, where I stepped out of underneath David's wing. And that was when I was 20 years old. And I started buying a number of single family properties, started buying smaller multifamily properties, and tried a little bit of everything. Owned apartment complexes, owned single family, owned condos, townhomes, land, commercial property. And today, and for the past 6 years, we've been solely focused on mobile home parks. So that's kind of like the quick 10,000 foot view of my background. And I've had other businesses along the way, non-real estate related, but real estate's always been at my core. I'm 39 years old now, and I started when I was 20. And so this is what I've been doing pretty much my entire adult life.
Right. Wow. Cool. So that first house of yours, were you a wholesaler for it, or did you rent it? I mean, out. What was?
Yes. Yeah, so I basically followed David's model. I didn't try to reinvent the wheel. And so David's model wasn't really fix up and flip. His model was fix up and then rent it, you know, create long-term passive cash flow. Right. Like, that was his model. And so I didn't know any better. And I was like, why am I going to reinvent the wheel? Mm-hmm. Right. Why am I going to fix what isn't broken? And so I mimicked what he did. Now, throughout the years, I also did a number of fix and flip projects. I did some wholesaling on maybe properties that I found that I didn't really want. You know, I just would flip them to someone else for a quick dollar. Mm-hmm. But really, the strategy and what has been my strategy over the last 19 years, the core focus has been buying income producing properties, buying properties, viewing them as in their own individual businesses that create reoccurring revenue on a monthly basis.
Gotcha. Yeah. That's, again, when I think about going into real estate investing, that's what I think is, like, you know, that's the smart move to make myself. But I mean, is that something that most people that are getting into REI should be thinking about? Or, I mean, what should newbies
be considering when they're even thinking about it? Should they do the focus on flips, or, I mean, which would you suggest and why?
I think it just really depends on your personal preference. I mean, you know, you have to kind of determine what your skill sets are. I wouldn't suggest that if someone's never been involved in, you know, like any kind of construction trade, or if they're not comfortable with, you know, running a project, like running, being a project manager and overseeing subcontractors and things like that, if they have never played that type of role, or they're not even comfortable being that type of leader, mm-hmm. then probably buying a house to fix it up and flip it, make a profit, might not be directly aligned with their personality, right? I mean, because you've got to be a really good project manager. You have to deal with people that probably don't show up to the job site on a weekly basis. You got to deal with a lot of different vendors and be good with budgeting your costs along the way. That's not your personality, probably not a good fit. Your wholesaling is a little different. Wholesaling is essentially finding a good deal and signing a purchase contract on it, and then selling that contract to another investor. You don't do a thing to the property. You don't have to know hardly anything about real estate. All you have to do is know how to find a good deal. Mm-hmm. And so like that, I'd say that business would be good for somebody that literally wants a little bit easier entry, lower risk entry into real estate investing. And that's where a lot of people start. They start by wholesaling houses, and then they get to know the business a little bit. They get to meet other people in the industry, and then they might start buying a project here and there to fix and flip. And then they slowly progress up the ladder. And the natural course of progression a lot of times is they go from fixing and flipping, and they might own some rentals along the way, and then they buy an apartment complex or a larger commercial property, and so on and so forth. Gotcha. So, you know, I think you just have to know who you are and your personality. I've always been okay with running projects and overseeing, you know, renovations, and I get that side of the business. And so it was never a discomfort area for me. So anyway, just know yourself, I think, is the best way to understand where you should go inside the real estate niche.
I love it. You know, my background in 2007, we flipped 42 houses. We had 150 doors in our property management company. So, you know, I understand a big part of the cool factor with real estate, and of course the headaches as well. But with that in mind, here's the big question, because you have you have more experience now than I ever had, given since you've been doing it since you were 20. Why mobile home parks?
That's a great question, Harrison. Everyone asks that question. If you didn't ask that question, I think you guys are crazy. No, it's because honestly, just like you guys, I never really thought of that asset class, you know, many years back. So I kind of give you a little bit more of a fill-in of my experience over the years. So built up quite a large portfolio of single family and multifamily properties leading into 2008. We all know what happened in 2008. It was a very challenging time in real estate.
My eyes are twitching right now.
Yeah, I have them every day thinking about it. was based in Southwest Florida, which was kind of ground zero for the real estate crash, and had a really challenging time, and lost a lot of what I had spent so many years building up. And so I took a couple of years hiatus out of real estate, started a few other non-real estate related businesses. And in 2011, 2012 timeframe, I decided to jump back in. I knew that this was like at my core, like I had this passion for real estate, but I essentially stuck my head in the sand and didn't want to think about it for a number of years because of what happened. And getting back into it, I knew that I wanted to be able to scale up again really fast. Like I built quite a large portfolio, and I wanted to be able to get up to that number again without taking 7 or 8 years to do it. And when I look back on my prior portfolio of the single family versus the multifamily apartments, the multifamily apartments were just much more efficient. It was easier to scale because I could go buy 40 units in one spot versus the amount of time and energy it would take to buy 40 single family homes. I mean, it's not even comparable, mm-hmm. right? And so I knew that moving forward, I wanted to buy only multifamily properties. And sometime along that exploration phase of before I jumped back in with both feet, I was introduced to a guy named Randy, who was in the manufactured housing space, not trailer park space, the manufactured housing space. he was in the financing side. He had basically for 30 years, he had financed mobile home parks all across the country. And then he retired shortly before I met him and started buying mobile home parks here in Florida. And I went to have lunch with him with no interest in his niche at all. I like to network and meet people. I mean, your net worth is your network. I truly believe that. And so I went and had lunch with Randy. And after that lunch, it was a 2-hour lunch. I left there basically committing to not buy multifamily, but to buy a mobile home park, at least one over the next year. I was going to learn everything I could about that niche and buy one mobile home park and either prove or disprove this business and, you know, that asset class. And that's what I did. So it took me actually a little bit more than a year to buy the first community. It took me about 14 or 15 months and bought that first one in Atlanta, Georgia. And here we are, you know, six or some odd years later. And that's all we focus in because it's a great niche. The returns are phenomenal. The opportunities are very abundant. And if you know what you're doing, you can make a lot of money. And to me, I saw there was a much bigger opportunity in this space than there was in the multifamily space.
All right. So I have to ask, a lot of newbies are going to be listening to this or folks not in the real estate world. So back when we were doing houses, I was buying houses $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. You know, putting some money into it and flipping them or say keeping them in cash flow properties. But you're talking about an entire park, right? So a much different financing scenario than me just trying to go get $30,000 or $40,000. So if somebody is fairly new, how would they even get started when you're talking about an entire mobile home park?
I mean, getting started just with anything else, I mean, you got to get educated, right? And so you know, there's unfortunately in this niche, there's not as much information readily available as there is in basically every other type of real estate. I mean, you can go on Amazon and if you want to learn how to fix and flip homes or buy an apartment building or self-storage, like you could probably find 1,000 books on each one of those topics. In mobile home parks, it's not as prevalent. And so there is education out there. We have two podcasts. I host two podcasts. One of them is specifically on mobile home park investing. And I think I've got about 85 or 86 episodes up right now. But I'd say start by reading as many books as you can on the topic, listening to our podcast, because we're very granular on the content we provide. I mean, we go into case studies on deals that we have owned or own today, how we bought them, how we found them, how we operate them, how we turn them around, how we make money with them, basically. And so that would be my first suggestion. Start there. You know, learn the business from a theoretical standpoint, and then start going out and applying those lessons that you've learned. Start looking at opportunities. Start underwriting deals. You know, looking at deals that are for sale by brokers or agents. And I mean that's how you get started with anything, right? You just gotta put both feet in and get rolling with it. Get educated and move forward and make progress. As far as you mentioned about like you know the money aspect of it, you kind of compared like a single family property, maybe like 40 grand to buying an entire mobile home park. I will tell you that the very first park we purchased was, we only spent $200,000 on it. So not saying that you can go out and readily find good mobile home parks for $200,000, but you don't necessarily have to think that you're going to have millions of dollars to get into this business. Now we do own mobile home parks that, you know, are $4-6 million communities, but there's also smaller scales. I mean, you don't have to buy, you know, 100 or 200 space mobile home community. You could buy a 20 or 25 space mobile home community and probably might not be much more expensive than a nice higher end single family home in that same market. So
now do you own the land and the manufactured home or do you, you know, how does that work?
That's a great question. In a perfect world, we wouldn't own any of the homes. Yes, we do own the land. In a perfect world, we would rather just rent the dirt and have the homeowners actually own their own units. And that's how this industry really started way back when. It was really developers came in and they built the infrastructure, the roads and the water lines, the sewer lines, and basically people would bring their mobile homes in and rent a lot. So it's like think of it as like a parking lot, right, for a mobile home. But typically these mobile homes don't ever move after they get actually set up there. Now, over time, things happen, you know, mobile home parks, the people that live in them, you know, if someone passes away, maybe their heirs don't want that mobile home. And so over time, you'll find that a lot of mobile home parks have acquired some of these mobile homes that are in them, not by choice, just because they have to. And so we do own a number of mobile homes, I think over 100 now today, like actual individual mobile homes throughout the different parks that we have. But it's not our preference. And I'll tell you why. When we just own the land, like when that's the only thing that we are responsible for in the community, we don't have to deal with the ACs breaking in the unit or the roof leaking or the plumbing repairs because the tenants own their unit, right? And so they have to actually, if that happens, that's their unit. They pay for it. And so when we just own the land itself, our only responsibility is maintaining the infrastructure. So make sure that the roads are in good shape, make sure that the water and sewer lines are in good shape, make sure that we maintain the common areas. If there's any kind of like playground or swimming pool or anything like that, we maintain that, but that's it. And so the management headaches associated with that are way less than they are if you're actually managing the units themselves, to where you have ACs breaking and plumbing leaks and roof leaks and all the above.
I love that, because as a former owner of a property management company, I can tell you that I lost a whole lot of my hair and got really gray and very stressed out for a long period of time. So, and this was back in 2006 and seven. So we didn't really have ACH and, you know, all these automatic payment systems that people have today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and I'll kind of I'll give you a comparison. Like we have, we've got a 120 space mobile home park that it's all, we don't own any of the homes in it. It's a very nice community. We don't own a single home in that community. They just pay lot rent from us. Well, the amount of energy that that community takes to run and operate on a daily and weekly basis, essentially, it takes the same manpower to run that as it does a 30 space community that we own, where we I think we own 25 of the homes that are in it. And so the same manpower on a daily and weekly basis to manage that small little 25 space community is the same manpower it takes to run the larger one, because in the larger one, we don't own any homes, and the smaller one, we own a majority of them. So, you know, the management intensity is far less when we don't own any of the homes. And that is the preference. But not only that, it's not only the management intensity, but what we have found is the residents that own their own home, their turnover rate is very, very low. Meaning that we have residents that live in a few of our communities that have been there 28 or 29 years. Whereas if they're just renting a home, if they're just literally renting the unit, just like a regular apartment or a single family home, you're going to find that they probably have more than 50% of them move every 12 months. Mm-hmm. So you got a transient crowd versus a homeowner type mentality. All day long, I would choose the homeowner over the transient renter crowd. So another big benefit of actually not owning the units and actually having the residents own them, because the turnover is incredibly, incredibly low.
Hmm. So one of the things that I would be interested in is, again, I mean, there are rental kind of mentalities. There's a rental mentality, and then there's the homeowner's mentality. A lot of those rental type people are going to be, you know, maybe they can't get their rent in on time. I would see that, you know, specifically mobile home dwellers, I guess, for lack of a better term, would be considered part of this group. I mean, how do you deal with like that as being an issue, and it's predominantly might even keep people from actually getting into buying mobile home parks?
And I would assume too a more challenging eviction process when things do happen. Yes.
I'll answer the first question about the tenant base, and I can definitely speak to the eviction side as well. The eviction more has to do with the state you're in, right? Every state's a little different as far as eviction laws are concerned. But I'll hit that answer second. So first and foremost, as far as the quality of the residents, I like to use the comparison of like apartment complexes, right? So where you guys live in Indianapolis, I'm sure there's lots of brand new Class A apartment complexes that are going up, you know, throughout different parts of the city, right? So those are high-end, A-grade. They're looking to attract, white-collar individuals. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you got the older parts of town that are probably the places that you don't want to go at nighttime, that are very unsafe, full of unsavory type of residents. Those are like D-grade, right? So you got the A-plus on the top end, you got the D-grade on the bottom end, war zone. You know, I consider like war zone to be D-grade. And then you got everything in between, which is typically the C and B class. And that's normally what we, you know, classify as like blue collar renters, right? People that just, they work good. They work the hours. It's a dual income household. They want to provide the best for their kids, but mm-hmm. they can't afford the best, right? I mean, they want the middle ground. They want a good, clean, safe and quiet place to live and raise their family. Well, you kind of have the same classifications in the mobile home park space. You've got the really high end things down here. Like down here in Florida where I live, there's retirement communities that they're not affordable. Like they're a choice for people to live in them. In fact, most people that probably live in them have a stick built home somewhere else in the country, and it's like a second home from them. These places have, you know, three or four swimming pools, full-time activities directors, palm trees on the streets. I mean, they're very fancy, very expensive to live in. And then you got the other end of that spectrum, which is the D grade, you know, war zone. I wouldn't send my worst enemy into it in the middle of the night. And then you got everything in between, kind of the same classification as the apartments. We got good old, good old fashioned blue collar folks that just want a clean, safe and quiet place to raise their family, something that's affordable. They're not interested in drugs and crime, but yet they also can't afford the A grade of the brand new, you know, higher end with all the amenities type facility or community. And so we follow right in the middle grade. And so our tenant base, although when we take over a community, we might have some unsavory tenants, we're very strict with our screening processes. And so we're very black and white. I mean, we manage these things very black and white. I mean, rent's due in the first, it's late in the sixth. We start the eviction after that. I mean, we don't let these things get out of control. We don't let the riffraff come in. Some might slip through the cracks, but we do background checks, credit checks. And so they have to have a certain income requirement that's met before they can qualify for the community. So we try to eliminate those bad apples from coming in. And for the most part, it's really up to us to ensure that we've got a good, solid running community. And so to answer your question, we don't deal with the bad tenant bases. I mean, they might be there, but we push them out pretty quickly. That's not really our business. And as far as the eviction, some states are a little challenging. Harrison, I think you asked a question about, you know, if they own their own home, it might be a little bit more challenging to evict them. Some states are a complete pain in the butt to get them out if they own their own home, if they haven't paid the lot rent. New York is quite a lengthy eviction process for mobile home parks. We own one community up in New York here today. We have not had to do an eviction all the way through up there, but my understanding is that it will take upwards of 6 months to essentially get that eviction process all the way through if they own their own home. And so that's quite a lengthy process. And then the other states where it's very quick, like, you know, Kentucky and Alabama, I mean, there's a whole handful of them that it's very quick, like literally within 45 days, even if they own their own home, I can get them out of there. I can get them out of that place. And what happens at that point in time, it's really up to them to move their home or sell it. And, but I can tell you for the most part, that's the cool thing about this business is that we've only had one of all the communities we own. We've only had one eviction where the person owned their own home go all the way through. Because here's what happens, guys. Their lot rent is incredibly low in comparison to what else it's going to, you know, what it's going to cost them to live in any other type of affordable housing in the market that they live in. So I'll give you an example. Across the board, across our entire basic communities, our lot rent's about $300 a month. And if they own their own home, that's probably the most valuable asset that they have. If they lose that home, if they lose at home simply because they couldn't pay the $300 a month, where the heck are they going to live? There is nowhere where they can go and I mean, maybe rent a room in a boarding house. I mean, I'm not even joking. And so most of the time, they figure out a way to come up with that $300 a month. One way or another, hell or high water, they figure it out. And so very few times do we ever truly get into an eviction process with someone that actually owns their own home. So I'm not sure if that was a good answer to your question or not, but it's one of the beautiful parts of this business. I don't want to act as though like evictions don't happen, but if they own their own home, there's a lot of leverage that the park owner has because, again, not only are they going to get put out in their butts, but they're going to lose this asset, this mobile home that to you and me might not be worth that much money, but to them, it's like all they have, right? I mean, it's like the most valuable thing in the world to them. So
let's kind of go kind of back into time here. Well, let's just say that Kevin of 2018 is talking to Kevin of 2000. And, you know, maybe you have 5 or 10,000 to get started with. Obviously, you had said that your first mobile home park was 200,000. That different numbers altogether. Should Kevin back then, should he had gotten started on land first, or what would you tell him to do to get to where you're at now?
You know, I think what you really have to do is if you're just getting started is, you know, research every different type of real estate. I mean, if that's where you're going to focus on is real estate, research every different type, you know, find out what's the best fit for your personality. Don't worry about the money yet. Like, don't worry about, I only have $10,000 or $15,000. Just it's inconsequential. It really is. Just worry about what it is you should be focusing in, where you want to pour your passion into. Once you've figured that out, go learn everything you can about that particular niche. Because I can tell you that even if you don't have a lot of money, like we've partnered on deals with people over the past that didn't have much money. Like they found mobile home parks that that they couldn't afford to take down on their own, nor did they have the experience to do on their own. And they brought us a deal and we literally brought them into the deal, essentially converted their finder's fee into equity in the deal and made them a partner. I mean, so they didn't have to do anything but find a good deal. They got really good at finding good opportunities, uncovering good opportunities that we didn't find on our own. And so I would say, again, back up to pick your niche, pick what you want to focus in, and is learn everything you can about it and get really good at finding opportunities. Because nothing else matters. If you don't understand how to find a good opportunity in whatever niche you're in, then nothing else matters. Not having the money doesn't matter. Not having the experience doesn't matter. Because you don't have any deals, right? You need to get really good at finding the deals.
Gotcha. And so when you're talking about deals, I mean, are there things that beginners should probably consider more of? I mean, should they look for certain sizes of the park or locations or what are some things that they need to consider?
Well, if you're speaking of like, if there's someone out there looking for a deal and they want to bring it to us, like we have certain criteria that we look for. Like, for example, we're looking for only mobile home parks that are 60 lots or larger. And it's got to be a metro population of at least 100,000 people, which can be a very small metro. We want to know there's population growth happening in the area, that it's not in a decline. We want to know that it's got a diverse employment base. We want to know that there's a demand for affordable housing. And typically how we look at determining if there's a demand for affordable housing is the median home prices and median rent prices in the area, and also the vacancy rates of the existing rental housing in the marketplace. So, you know, for us, we're looking for below a 7% unemployment rate. We're looking for, you know, what are some of the other factors here? I'm trying to think, you know, less than 15% vacant housing rate. And there's a bunch of other factors as well, but I mean, that's kind of what we look for. But size wise is the most important. Like that's first and foremost. That's like, if someone brought us a deal that's only 30 spaces in size, we wouldn't have an interest. It doesn't matter what the market is. We want something that's slightly larger because we get some scales of economy once you get into a little bit larger mobile home park. So 60 spaces is that number for us.
How would people start finding these opportunities? Because there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, auctions, especially when it comes to raw land and, like, you know, doing tax auctions and all these different things. How does someone actually find a property that they could take to someone as a potential deal?
That's a great question. I mean, there's a couple of big websites out there that, you know, that have listed properties that are, you know, listed through brokers. One is loopnet.com. Another one's CoStar.com. And then there's a website called mobilehomeparkstore.com, that's all they sell are mobile home parks. So that's kind of like the easy low hanging fruit. A lot of times there's not really good opportunities on those sites because they've been picked over many times before they make it there. You can get out and drive around in your car. I mean, any area where you guys live, there's tons of mobile home parks in Indianapolis, you know, tons of mobile home parks across the U.S. So that would be one way of getting out and just, you know, knocking on doors, you know, knocking on the door and seeing if you could talk to the owner. We actually do a lot of direct marketing. So we do a lot of direct mail and a lot of cold calling. So we've spent many years building out essentially a proprietary database of every mobile home park that we would have an interest in buying throughout the country, you know, based on the size of the market, the population, all those criteria I just gave you earlier. And we focus on just targeting that list. I mean, by direct mail on a regular basis, cold calling and follow up on a regular basis. So we generate a lot of our own opportunities in-house. And so anyone else could do the same exact thing. It's not rocket science at all. And there's not that many mobile home parks in the U.S. I think there's about 50,000 total, which is a very small number in comparison to just about any other type of real estate, whether it be apartments or houses or anything like that. So not that challenging to come up with a list of mobile home parks in a couple different markets.
And what about actually developing a mobile home park?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's one that's been the topic of discussion, not internally here at our office, but you know, even at the local industry events, we've heard that discussion come up many times. And I'll tell you that the challenge with it is that, you know, any kind of development play, you've got a lot of delayed income, you know, that's going to come from that project. So it's very cash heavy on the front end, and you essentially need to get leased up in order to have any kind of, you know, revenue stream coming from that project. And so with a mobile home park, you could build the infrastructure, you could do that fairly quickly, put the roads in, you know, put the lots in place. But as far as people moving their homes in, there's not a huge financing market for consumers that want to buy a mobile home to move it into a park. And so the financing, it's not there anymore, that like it used to be back in like the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. And so it's very challenging for consumers to buy their own home today. And so if you build the infrastructure, if you build the land, there's not a good chance they'll come, is the best way to put it. So it's not like Field of Dreams where you build it, they will come. I mean, the good chance is you'll build it. And if they do come, they'll come very slowly, and it will take a long time for you to fill up that community. And so with that being said, there's a much better opportunity in buying pre-existing mobile home parks that already have the infrastructure in place. Maybe they've got some challenges with the operations that you can easily get in there and turn around. That's kind of our niche. Like, we buy things that are distressed, some more than others, that we know we can go in and make some operational changes. And we don't have to worry about the development play, because we're buying something that's got some cash flow in place. So we can go in, have some ongoing cash flow while we make these changes to make it operate more efficiently. So that's kind of my answer to the why not develop. And on top of that, mobile home parks, just like how you guys thought about it initially, mobile home parks somewhat have a derogatory sentiment to them, right? And, you know, a lot of people think of them as just kind of low-end, crime-ridden, drug, sex, and rock and roll type communities. And that's just not the case, but municipalities think that way. Most municipalities across the U.S. think that way. And so if you were to go try to get approval for building a new mobile home park, 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to get a big fat no really quick, because they don't want it built in their community. And so if you even had the ability to get an approval to get it developed, now you're running into that next issue, which is building it, but will they come? So much easier to buy something existing.
Is there any future in, the trend we've seen the last couple of years of like tiny home parks or these micro homes?
You know, they've popped up across the country, but more so in, more trendy markets like Austin, Texas, Asheville, North Carolina. I'm sure there's a few other markets I'm missing there. But I'll tell you that the number one, the tiny houses, that's not affordable housing, because those things are expensive. I don't know if you guys have ever looked at the pricing of them, but I mean, on the average unit's about 300 or 400 square feet, and those things sell for like, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. So it doesn't really fit in the model of affordable housing, like we classify affordable housing. And so I'd say that there's a need for it, and there's a niche. Is it widespread enough to where we would consider getting into it? Probably not. If we were based in a more trendy demographic, or if we own communities in like Austin or something like that, when there's a demand for it, maybe we would do some partial infills, that type of product. But overall, it's not really our MO. You know, we're affordable housing. We want to give a nice, clean, safe, and quiet place for family to raise their family, husband and wife to raise their family, send their kids to good schools. And the tiny housing doesn't necessarily fit in that model.
I love it. And so you're not just about making a profit. You've also launched 2 nonprofits yourself, correct? You have Running for Brews and 72 Hours to Key West. Both sound amazing, by the way. How important is it to you to give back? And, what's the purpose of the nonprofits?
Yeah. So I will say that one of the two is my company. So Running for Brews is our foundation. It's not a nonprofit, though. It's a for-profit, but all of our profits go to different charitable endeavors in our area. So just want to clarify that, as well as 72 Hours to Key West is a bike ride I put on each and every year. And that one benefits the Tiny Hands Foundation, which is a very close friend of mine that founded that nonprofit. And so both of those, what we do is we like giving back to our local community. I live in the Tampa Bay area, and we like helping those that we surround ourselves with on a daily basis. And so it's incredibly important to me to help others. The bike ride, we raise on average about $25,000 to $30,000 a year. And then we turn around and feed less fortunate families during the Christmas season here. So last year we fed just under 3,000 families and provided presents so that the kids had a gift unwrapped, a Christmas morning. Running for Brews, we've got locations all across the country. So that was one of my business endeavors after the real estate crash that I started, my non-real estate related business ventures. We've got 38 locations across the country now. It's a social running club that revolves around craft beer, which is why I love running, and I love craft beer. And so I kind of married the two together, but I also love giving back. And so each and every one of our chapters has a charitable component to it. They essentially, pick in whatever respective areas they're in, they pick charities that are near and dear to their hearts, and they do, canned food drives, they do 5K races, and all the proceeds benefit whatever charitable organization there is locally to them. So I started one here in Tampa. Actually, I started like three here in Tampa, and then it's kind of spawned into, I think we're in 13 different states right now with that organization. So it's pretty cool. We kind of have a really far reach with it. I can't take all the credit for it. I started the idea, and it's kind of spread like wildfire since then. So it's pretty cool.
So Kevin, the real estate investment is going well. The nonprofit and the running for brews is going well. What's on tap for you for the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we really love what we do here. We love the product and the people that we serve. And so we're growing like gangbusters. We're doubling in size this year and have a goal of basically quadrupling in size in the next 4 to 5 years here, our organization here, Sunrise Capital Investors. And so that's really exciting. And other than that, guys, I focus most of my time on family and the rest of the time on business. So I'm not sure that that's the answer you're looking for, but that's what the future holds for me.
I think it's great. I mean, balance is so important. And I think that hits one important point that some of these younger investors or newbies probably need to understand. I wish I would have understood it when I was younger. But actually creating some balance and spending time with family, friends, and things that are important to you. Because we do live in this 24/7 hustle culture. And it's just not healthy to be that way.
I agree. Yep, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree with you wholeheartedly.
So the next and final segment is the rapid fire questions. First one that I love asking people to, because it kind of gives me an insight of who people are and where they're from. What they've learned along the way. Who are three influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
Yeah, so first one was David. His last name's Christmas, so that's his real name, David Christmas. He's the guy that got me into real estate back when I was 19 years old. My wife, I mean, she's a huge support mechanism in my life and played a big supportive role even during the downturn, the recessionary period, which was a very challenging time in my life. And then my parents. So I know that's two people, but both my parents as well. I mean, just the support they gave me in my younger years, even though I was a, you know, kind of out of control teenager. I don't think I'd be where I'm at today if it wasn't for them kicking my butt back in gear. So those are the three.
What's one gift that you like giving others?
Education. I mean, I love... giving the ability to empower someone else, you know, with knowledge, you know, knowledge about a particular topic, if it's something that I'm, I feel like I'm well versed in. So knowledge is a big one.
What is something you believed as a 30-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is completely inaccurate and why?
That's a great question. What is something I believed as a 30-year-old? Ask me that question again, just so I fully comprehend what you're...
Something that you thought was true 10 years ago as a 30-year-old and you now believe is completely inaccurate, and why?
That as we get older, our bones don't get creakier and we don't ache more, because I get achier and achier every day. I don't know.
That's the youth leaving your body.
That's it. I guess so.
What's your least favorite social custom?
That's a really good one too, guys. Least favorite social custom. I tell you, my wife is Polish, and the men kiss each other on the lips, and I think I'm okay with hugs. I like hugs and all that, but that's a little awkward for me still. But I'm trying to get used to it.
I guess I've never seen that before. That's definitely interesting.
I mean, it's not like a deep passionate kind of kiss. It's just like a little peck. But this, yeah,
that's interesting. Last one is, how can someone be a difference maker in their community?
I think by giving back. You know, we talked about the charitable endeavors that I'm involved in, and it doesn't mean you have to have money to give back, right? I mean, time is everything. So go devote your time to, whether it be a, you know, a church or a temple or local charity. Maybe it's Habitat for Humanity. Maybe you're building a house for a local family in need, but just devote your time and try to set aside. I mean, my suggestion is just to get started, set aside maybe 2 hours a month. Everyone's got 2 hours in the month, right? Set aside 2 hours a month, find a charity that aligns with your core beliefs, and go donate some of your time, you know, go volunteer.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being on with us today. You can be found again at KevinBupp, spelled BUPP.com. Where can people find you on the socials?
I mean, just go to, you know, Facebook or LinkedIn, the best way to find me on social media. But my website, you know, kevinbupp.com, or my company website is sunrisecapitalinvestors.com. So either one of those, you can contact me directly, or again, on Facebook or LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably the best.
Well, thank you again so much, and it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir.
Well, there you have it, guys. Lots and lots of value there. If you're still wondering how to get started with real estate investing, or, you know, if you want to make things a little bit more streamlined for your already existing real estate investing business, a lot of good pointers there and a really strong argument into getting into mobile home park investing. Don't forget, if you're just starting out and know of any mobile home parks that fit his criteria, reach out and see if he'd be interested in to partner with you. Just remember to tell him where you heard him. If you're wanting to take this conversation to the next level with Kevin, I have a few interviews of his that are available in the show note extras. Since he's a top podcaster himself, I thought it'd be fitting to share some of the other shows he's been on. So I have him being interviewed on the Bigger Pockets podcast, the REI Foundation podcast, and the Lifetime Cash Flow through REI with Rod Cleef show. In the podcast, he also mentioned that he's a biking enthusiast. So I also posted a video montage from a biking trip he did back in 2014 called 72 Hours to Key West. And personally, as someone who's been around endurance events, in fact, I'm going to be the MC for a triathlon this upcoming weekend. You know, this looks like something that would be fun if you're in the area. In the next session, session 125, I'll be chatting with someone that I'm really excited to have on the show. I recently read his book, Reinvented Life, which paralleled a lot of what I've been discovering on my own and talking with guests on the show about. You know, really living a fulfilling life and by doing super engaging work. His name is Damian Lupo, and we got into a lot of different topics, including defining true wealth, his background in investing, which includes real estate investing, and why he calls the pillars of Yokido. I think this chat makes a great capstone to the two that we've had previously here, and I hope you guys enjoy it just as much as Damian and I had in making it. So that's it for session 124. Don't forget, if you're interested in finding out about chatbots and how they can help your business, don't miss out on Hector's free chatbot trainings. Get started at newinceptions.com/Facebook chatbot. That being said, gang, thanks for joining Kevin Harrison and myself today. And until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.